Now recording is on. Okay, we go to today's lecture. This is the kind of last lecture I planned for the introduction kind of part of the course. You already had a video lecture on Agile, which we're going to talk next week lectures, but still. So we're mostly going to talk about quality in context of information systems development. So some general perspectives on quality and so we can't go to many details in one lecture, and in the end of the lecture I will save some time to give some comments on generally on research in the field. Few things I want to say about research generally in the field of information systems development for you to know when you read literature, the papers, for example, for the exam in this course. And so but let's go. Just maybe I open that and explain during the way. Okay, the other things I mentioned in the first lecture also. So there are several reasons when things go wrong. It was in the first couple of examples, it was a small bug. London ambulance system, the whole project management failed, just like in FBI virtual case file system. I mentioned VR's ticket machines a few years ago. Well-known failure in Finland. I don't know what went wrong there, but several things, at least some things in project management and so on. Okay, this is general things. Okay, the most common fields in general which we read about in news when something goes wrong are something, it's related to IT or construction. So there is something wrong with IT or buildings. So, and what it caused when something goes wrong with software in this case is, so generally, few categories comes to my mind first. Okay, it costs a lot money. It may cost maybe even lives even, just like in a couple of mentioned cases. Okay, it may affect the whole society, like bare ticket, it's affected transportation at least temporarily. There has been issues with banking systems now and then. Usually they don't last so long that they would affect seriously the whole business, but let's say if something happened that caused crashing out the banking systems for a few weeks, for example, it would be disaster for the whole society. And so on. Power networks, there's been some problems, like the one of the most famous was like it was only 15 years ago, 2003, and some there was it northeast in the US and Canadian area, maybe if I remember right, 50 million people suffered for a power outage for up to 2 days or something like that. Some kind of huge chain reaction in the whole system caused huge error in the whole system for a wide area in electricity. And nowadays, if we lose electricity, that means everything for the whole society. Okay. Just quickly, I'm not going into any details. This is just an old picture of general idea of the quality cost. We easily, what is the quality cost for any kind of business? If you think specifically software businesses, there are direct costs. The idea is that the tip of the iceberg here are the direct costs, like what we invest in producing quality, like quality processes, quality assurance, and so on. And if we fail with quality, what is the cost for rework and such like things after that, after the delivery. Then the idea of the whole picture and the whole article here is that, and that's not all, but it kind of the costs accumulate in the organization, and there are several indirect costs included also. Do the administration and paperwork from rebilling customers and negotiations again and so on. I showed this in the first picture. Again, repeat the basic idea. Old data from IBM from the 70s collected by Barry Bainman and his team. The basic idea here is that compared to the requirement stage, if you, this is relative cost of finding and fixing bug. So, for example, here this is based on this picture on classic waterfall model. We can forget that, but it's the idea here that in the original data, that if you have a defect in your requirements, the cost of finding and fixing that defect in the requirements is 40 times more on average in system test phase compared to the requirements if you find it when you initially write the requirements. So that's the idea. So we can forget the waterfall model now. Nowadays, maybe our process models have improved, our technology has improved, the whole goal of the improvement has been for the long time to make this curve a bit different. So to enable making changes cheaper and easier in the process. So the curve is not the same, but you can think it. I think it's still valid if you forget the stages of the waterfall model and put a simple timeline there in the horizontal line. The basic idea is that the longer a defect remains in the project, the more it costs. Okay, simple principle. It's always cheaper to find the defect fast. And then a bit different idea we talked in my first lecture also about chaos report and project failures and so on. Okay, this is the definition of a successful project in the chaos report. So it's delivered on time, on budget, and includes all the planned features. Okay, this is an interesting point. We're going to discuss about this when we discuss about agile and different. But anyway, I'm not going to challenge this definition. I'm not proposing here that we should add additional component quality there, but you can think quality based on these dimensions. What my question is generally to raise ideas here is that you can think what quality is in these terms in a software project. Okay, then I'm not going to read this. Take a minute and read this through as an introduction, all the quotes of quality. intention to do that. Okay. Okay, my idea was just to give some random thoughts related to quality. Maybe no logic there before this. So now this is my question. So, and I want you to answer this. Let's take some time to think about this. There is no right answer to this. If you have my slides on your laptop, I have one answer in the next slide, but it's not the right answer for this. I want to see here with you some different perspectives on quality. Just tell me what you think about this. So, what is quality for you? Or it can be quality generally for you as a customer, or if you think about software project, what it means to several stakeholders there. So, give me something. What is quality? Yeah?
Something that is pursued as good.
Okay, something good. Okay, what is good? Okay, if you buy a phone, what is good? Let's see how this...
It fits my needs.
Okay, that's good. Okay, this is not a good tool for this. Let's just... Okay, this is read-only. Not a good... Okay, let's forget that. It takes too much time. I was planning to write something down, but... Let's forget it. So, good fits for the purpose. Okay, what else? What is good?
Durability.
Durability.
Get broken after a couple of
weeks. Phone. Okay, that's good. I take that one. What else? Yeah?
Finishing details, and you could actually see that people have put effort into the product.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean, like, what would be the keyword to describe that? Do you mean usability or just kind of feeling of quality? Okay, feeling. That's better. Yeah? Okay. What else? What is quality? If you buy technology, let's continue with this. Yeah?
It brings some benefits, some value to the user.
Yeah, some value. Possibly you expect to get some value when you buy something.
Yeah,
usually. Yeah. It's... Okay.
Without any errors.
Okay.
So that, and it should be developed so that it has been developed proactively but also reactively so that it is okay. Not the user that finds the possible bugs there.
Okay. Okay. Some, okay, what would be, okay, reliability would be one keyword to describe that. But okay, it's another question. What's reliability? What is enough reliability for the customer? Okay, let's come back to that later. Yes.
Well, one would expect the quality products to last long.
Yeah, last long. That was said at some level already. Yes. Good. Okay. Pretty much what we said based on this. phone example were kind of technical characteristics of quality. What if we think about software project more broadly? What is quality in a software project? What do you expect? Think you are a customer in a software project. What do you expect of the project? What is quality in that sense? So you don't expect anything. You just order something. Okay, working software. Okay, tested working software. Yeah. Okay.
That's quality when it's perfect fit with the customer's needs.
Okay, fit with the customer's needs. Okay, that's good. We're still more or less talking about the technical quality thing. Yeah?
Just thinking that you have a quality piece of software or something that no one needs. If you have a, if you go to the shop and you see that's in trash.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. This value again, it must fit to the actual needs. Yeah. It's okay. Okay, I was looking for some relationship to the ASICs. If we forget the technical quality of the product. If I think about software project, the actual outcome or actual what I expect if I'm a customer, the result of the project is outcome of the project. It's not only what brings value to me as a customer. It's not only the technical product, but also that the project is delivered on time and on budget. The technical quality relates to the third point in this project for success definition. So something that, like that. Okay. The point of this all is that we could continue this for a long time. The point of this all was that we can perceive quality from very different perspectives. And what matters is the business value that is mentioned several times here. And also, again, the right answer is it depends, okay? Everything depends on the context that we put it in. Okay, here is some famous definition in our field, which, okay, if I have to pick one general definition, I would take this. But this doesn't tell much. This is just general definition that emphasizes the business value. So it's value to some person, and that's important emphasis in this definition. So this is a bit philosophical point of view, but if there is a concept of value, it must mean something to some person. It's nothing ambiguous. It must relate to some person who gives the value to something. We call valid quality here. Yeah, let's revise this. You should know this already, but this is important when you read stuff in the field. For example, we last time discussed about maturity models, CMM mostly. That's like process frameworks. You face these general terms it's this is basic trivial, but this is important. These are two different things and related to different activities in an organization, and again, the in those process frameworks and whatever stuff you read in the field. So validation means do the right thing, and verification means that you do the things right. So to put it in the context of systems development and the terms you know for sure, validation means checking that your requirements for the project are right. Verification means, for example, testing that your software works according to the requirements. So this is one framework for quality, and this is about technical quality software. There is a standard. Roots of the standard are from, I don't remember from where. Previous model was from 91 or something like that. So I think this has been criticized, but this is at least one model about technical quality, if you want one. So it has this standard defines some characteristics for technical quality. There are some sub-characteristics, I think more than 30, included in the document if you find and read it. So just like, I'm not going into any details, so. But this includes many of the viewpoints you brought when we discussed about quality related to the technical quality, like functional suitability. It does the thing. It's reliable. It's usable. Performance. It depends on the project how much it matters, but it matters more or less in every project. So it's compatibility with other systems, maintainability, security, portability, general viewpoints. What do you do with this kind of standard? For example, this has been often generally used for requirements engineering when you define non-functional functional requirements for a software. So this is often used as a framework for that. So, okay, let's forget it for now. Okay, this is my simplified summary. When we talk about quality, our goal is to produce quality and system development. This is my simplified formula of this. We have individuals. I mentioned this in my first lecture, that people matter in the field. We must not forget that. It's the most important factor in our business. It's, for example, if we simply talk about software bugs, it's about the people, how many bugs we put in the software originally. Okay. Then we have processes. I'm not going to talk about much that in this lecture. We talked about processes last time. So the idea is that with good processes, we can possibly help people to do the work better. With good processes, we expect that we possibly make less mistakes and so on. There is also those critical points, like you possibly found when you did your assignments. Most typical critique is like process definitions don't guarantee, they never guarantee good quality. especially when we talk about certificates, ISO certificates, or CMMI levels, or something like that, achievements in process improvement. Those certificates or assessed level, maturity levels, they never guarantee good quality. Actually, that kind of ISO certificate, that audit only checks that you have defined processes and you actually act according to the processes. So you can get a certificate with really dumb and heavy processes. That doesn't guarantee anything. Of course, we usually don't aim for that, but generally, we expect that good processes help in doing quality in their own point, and then we may have some quality assurance activities to assure quality. And these all have different roles. We could discuss a lot of each of these, but let's go forward with this. Okay, then some words about quality assurance. Few basic things about software testing. Okay, these are trivial, really basic, but there are a couple of points I want you to understand and remember. That's why I'm going through. There are a lot of different terms related to software testing listed there, some examples. So I'm not going to give you definitions for those. Main categories, traditionally, testing has been divided to black box or white box testing. The meaning of that is that black box, you are focused only the input and output, like the final system testing or acceptance testing for the final product. You simply have a plan for some input you use for testing, and then you are interested that it produced the right output. That's black box between. That's the basic idea that in these general principles. Then white box means that, for example, unit test in programming phase, you understand the program structure and code internally, and you take that into account when you design your tests. For example, you aim for some testing coverage, that it goes through all parts of the code at least once, or something like that. So, gray box means something between those. Okay, this is a traditional idea. Okay, this is pretty classic old stuff. The most important thing of this is to know what it means. You often hear references to this. KB model, it's based on the traditional waterfall model on the left, and it relates to the quality assurance activities. On the right side, you have equivalent testing and stages. So, and then there's been added inspections, a couple of words of them later. Again, I'm not going to go into any details about this. But basically, have you seen this before? How many? Yes, you know the thing. Okay, a few basic things about software testing. Old definition. From Glenn von Myers, from 70s, the book is still read widely. The testing is the process of executing a program with the intent of finding errors. Okay, a crucial thing here is, and so this Myers emphasized that testing is not demonstrating that errors are not present. So you can't Okay, this is important. One important thing here. With testing, you cannot prove that your software works. So it's not the intent, it's not the goal of testing to prove that the software works. It's the goal of testing is to find defects in the software. Okay, testing, it's not an ad hoc activity. It doesn't mean that you just go and try the software a bit. It's planned and systematic activity. In some critical project, it may take a lot of time. We have discussed about this already enough that there may be that small bug that caused the crash of the whole system. During the history, there have been some movements and some voices to stand for bug-free software goal, but most of us think that it's just a dream. Okay, basically, it's impossible or it costs too much to aim for bug-free software. So we must find some other ways to control fine enough quality. So some fundamental issues. With testing, so an old quote from Dijkstra, one of the grand old men in computer science, that you can use testing for finding the bugs, so presence of bugs, but never to show their absence. The thing is that it goes with other features also. So with testing, you find only defects of something that exists. You cannot use testing for finding something that's missing. Okay, this is simple, trivial, but so I'm just going through these basic fundamentals because this is sometimes forgotten in the field. So most important thing of this all is to understand that it's not fine enough for quality if we think that we just define code and test software. Assuring quality, it's much more than this. So it's well-tested software means that if that's only thing you have done, there is possibly a lot of missing in your software, for example. It doesn't do validation, it doesn't check that your requirements are right. It just check that the software works as it has been defined. Some other non-functional qualities also, they cannot be checked in testing. So I'm thinking, one thing is that sometimes this testing coverage has been emphasized too much. So I'm not going into details in that. It would be too long a story to understand testing coverage and the theory behind that if you don't know it already. But if you read in that, testing coverage it's not a just single concept. There are several different kind of testing coverages. So even in the technical meaning of finding bugs in a software, if that's our goal, 100% testing coverage necessarily doesn't mean anything. It's been discussed a lot related to the current technology and test-driven development trend. In which we aim to write unit tests in coding phase for each part of the software. The aim may be 100% test coverage. But it means that if you have in those calculations 100% test coverage, it goes through all the parts of the code at once. But there may be millions of different variations in the software that it doesn't take into account. So there are different stages of software that should be tested. If you really would like to test all the possibilities and possible scenarios you would have in using the software, that would require much more testing than 100% testing coverage in this, if you define it only going through the code once. So just my point here was, if you see in some project this kind of mentions that our code has 100% testing coverage, that doesn't mean anything to quality. Okay, it may be something now, but it doesn't guarantee anything. Okay, a couple of words about reviews and inspections. So, if I don't explain this, do you know what this means? Have you heard about software inspections? Is this a familiar term overall? Raise your hand if yes. No? Okay. Then a couple of words. Okay. This is my very brief summary of this. Reviews and inspections, so the terms vary a lot. They can mean that sometimes the same thing, sometimes not. But this is, we start with inspections, and if we compare it to the previous definition for software testing, for me, inspection means that it's a process of reading a document, any document, with the intent of finding errors. So the testing definition was that we run a software for finding errors. This means that the intent is, again, finding errors, but we do it manually by reading a document. It's human work. So what's the idea of this all? Basically, this we just discussed about limitations of software testing. You cannot find something that's missing and that kind of things. We need something else. And this is it. So basic things about software inspections were what has been presented. This has been implemented different ways in different organizations with different traditions, but often it's regarded as a good idea that it's made by peers, so with similar kind of skills. So if you review requirements, so it would be a good idea that the people are, at least there are included some other requirements engineers who are familiar with the organization, familiar with the same kind of documents. If you review a project plan, it's a good idea to have other project managers to review the documents and so on. That's like that. In some organizations, for example, those work related to the electronics, like in several big companies have both electronics and software in the same company. And in electronics, it's a strong tradition that you have a separate quality department who does the quality assurance, independent department to make basically everything that relates to quality. So, but that's not the initial idea of these inspections. It's Okay, you can, in some organizations they do it like that, but in software engineering it's often regarded that it's a good idea if it's integral part of the process and the developers check their the others work as part of the process. There are different terms like those, not going to explain them in detail. Okay, few reported benefits of this all. Like, they have calculated some estimated savings, big organizations, basically all of this, or like that Russell, the third point, calculated that every hour used for this kind of software inspections saved 33 hours of maintenance costs in a case organization and things like that. So you may have some doubts about this. I have also, but basically I think the trend is clear. All the stuff is old because all the research in the field is basically old. So, okay, this is interesting. The final research, the Basili and Selby, pretty old study, but they found that even this is not something we naturally think about. This that naturally inspections this human work, reading the code. By the way, in the experiment they made, they used software code as a document for inspections, and they compared that manual human work reading to software testing the same pieces of code, and they compared the results, and they found naturally that they found different kind of effects. So testing activities found different, a bit different effects on average than that reading the documents. And documents mean this, the same software code. But the second was interesting that in this study, that manual work was more effective. So less hours per found defect by reading the software code manually compared to software testing. Okay, some presentation of what it would mean in practice. Let's say we have a project plan. Okay, there are a lot of stages in this process, but it's not necessarily as heavy as this looks in the slide. So it starts when the project manager says, then I have my project plan ready for review or inspection, whatever you call it in the organization. Then you start and plan how to do the inspection. That means basically that who you invite to participate, when you're going to have some activities, what is the schedule for it, and so on. Then you possibly have a startup meeting, sometimes not. Startup meeting means that if you think it would save time from the others to explain some basic things and background before they carefully read the document, it's a good idea. So if it helps the readers and saves overall time, you have a startup meeting to explain some basic things before. And then important part, the idea is that every participant individually read the document under inspection. And then you have a meeting in which the main focus is not to have brainstorming overall, but just collect and lock down the found defects. You may find some new defects in the meeting, but the basic idea is that possibly 80% of the defects have been found during the individual stage. Okay, and so on. Then when you have locked the found defects, you think what to do with them and go forward. Okay, basic idea briefly. Okay, what happens in practice? I did my doctoral dissertation related to this and some of the findings, what happens in practice very briefly. So if we think about this, this is a good goal. If you do this, it works. But there are some psychological things. First, for example, people regard this as a boring job. When you get, okay, it's kind of engineering mind that when people get something ready, they are kind of, engineers want to do some new things, and when they are in developing some new things, it's fun. It's interesting part of the job, but this is not it. This is just ensuring that your friend in the same organization has done good job, and there are some other psychological issues. Not long explanations about that, but the most crucial part is that individual part. What happens in practice that people don't do their homework before the meeting. They start, like you have been possibly in this kind of meetings yourself for other kind of purposes. The most important, they must remember the whole thing, the intention for testing software or having reviews or inspections is to find defects. That's the point of this whole thing. Okay, you may have some other side benefits of this all, but that's the main thing. What happens if you don't prepare, you don't do your homework, you start reading the document when you come to the meeting, you find possibly only 10% of the defects you could find if you do the thing properly. Okay, and that's what happens a lot in practice based on my findings. Okay, everything is related. That leads to irrelevant discussions in meeting. The time in the meeting also goes to some side paths. And again, that decreases the number of possible defects found and so on. So there is a poor attitude, like I already explained a bit, to the whole thing of doing inspections. Okay, there is way, way too much material per inspection to do it properly. Okay, if there are wrong people, that often happens. They don't have the proper skills. Let's say we have technical designs for inspection. You need to have proper skills to do the inspection effectively. And you don't invest resource in this. Okay, these are the typical problems I found, and you do it. Okay, let's try this, something briefly in practice. So now, be prepared. In the next slide, I give you some text. Your goal is to find some issues in the text. It might be missing dots, or more importantly, if there are some logical mistakes, which would be more crucial to find. This is also what happens in the meetings. If you don't prepare and do your homework well, you find only those missing dots, but you miss the whole logical errors and those which would require more focused reading and paying attention to it. So, okay, let's try. It doesn't take long. You read and find errors. Okay. Okay, this is just based on, I didn't ask in my study how much they use time in the organizations for this. But based on some literature, this is kind of some average time per page. And you can imagine if you use this much of the time, how many logical errors and those. So nobody cares about the missing dots. Finally, it doesn't matter for the final product much in software business. It's not the point. It's you want to really find those important logical errors, big and ghostly defects in any documents you may read. So, but this is an average time they use for inspections. And maybe one last point. Sometimes you mix these terms and practices in the organizations. When they talk about inspections and reviews, they talk about some kind of milestone reviews in the project, in which the whole point is not to find effectively defects, as we discussed here, but just to check after some milestone in a project, they try to check quickly that all the documents are ready, all the work products for that milestone are ready, and that's kind of quick check for that. Administrational stuff, that's not quality assurance in these terms we discussed here. Okay, we come back to this. I'm about to close this part of the session. So, again, my summary of quality. In software business, we have the individuals who play the big role in this all. We have some processes, process frameworks, quality management systems, whatever we call them, depending on the organization and context. Then we have some quality assurance activities. And this all makes some quality, whatever it is, depending on the context. Okay, a few thoughts in the end. Okay, I'm not going to give throughout answers to this, but some ideas. How to measure quality? It's a good question. I'm not going to answer that, but it's then how much quality is enough? So, the point was that if we start with our business goals, we must define what is quality in that specific context. And then we should be able to somehow measure what's fine enough quality for us. Okay, that's how many boxes, just one simple example that we discussed in the beginning again about those famous big software project failures, couple of examples in which one small bug in the wrong place caused use effect. The whole system failed for one bug. So that one bug was too much. In contrast, there may be much better examples, but one I remember from years ago, I had a presentation. It was before touchscreen phones. Nokia had some machine, I think it was called internet tablet or something like that. Looked pretty much similar as current phones, but it wasn't phone, just for internet. And but the big thing for Nokia then was for the production, that it changed the production logic. They had background with Symbian development. They had built the whole Symbian system from scratch. It was completely in their own hands and completely different kind of system. Well, it's not the point here, but in that product, they first time tried to implement Linux platform. Not only tried, they did that. It changed a lot their whole software engineering system there. But what I remember from the presentation from years ago, that they, at that point, in that Linux platform, they had the guy who gave the presentation said that they have 100,000 known and reported bugs in the software. And that's fine. You have to tolerate it. It means it's a huge platform. It includes thousands of different modules programmed by different groups globally. Okay, you know it's open source, huge platform. It caused this phenomenon. So 100,000 bucks, it was fine. You just have to be able to keep the most crucial parts of the software working reliably enough. So that's kind of a variation in different kind of projects. I don't know how good these examples are, but easily what I can pick up. I'm not expert in nuclear power plants or military software systems, but just my idea that there might be strict requirements for safety, reliability. I could imagine at least that if I was doing a cooling system for a nuclear power plant, we would want it to work reliably 24/7, 365. But in some other cases, if you have a general web store, nothing special there, nobody dies. It must be good enough for the purpose. Possibly that reliability requirement, it's not too high. It's nothing new there. You can easily build some kind of web store in our nowadays. Okay, money transfers must be safe, but it's been done already so many times that there's nothing special to handle those. So the tolerance is so much different. Or my idea that the comparison to web store and a mobile game, that's again a bit different. If you launch a web store, it must be at some level, of course, a game also, but there may be some difference. I don't know if it really is, but I could easily imagine that if you launch a web store, it must be kind of more complete, more ready for the final. Whereas in several mobile games, you just put there some working version and continue development years after that and release kind of new versions and add-ons weekly, or sometimes even more often. My one example, luckily not in my watch, but I've seen in some sports watches when I followed, they launch a new product, and you have here hardware, including some functionality, and then you have software. And in some watches, I've seen that they literally they launch pretty at most half of the software with the first version of the product. So basically, it didn't mean any small add-ons later, but in their advisements before launching the new product, they promised some functionalities. Main functionalities. And when the first buyers got the product, only the half of the functionalities because of the software was in the product, and it took year or something like that before they got the main functionalities in the software they advertised in the beginning. So, but it was, they are still buying the products, and so nothing wrong with the business. That's just tolerance in that specific case. Obviously, you can do that. The customers were not too happy, but they're still buying the products. But the whole point was the different kind of cases. Quality means different things. And different kind of business models. You have to fit that fine enough quality for your business goals. Because basically, you cannot afford to produce too high quality. It costs a lot. Basically, should I write it here? Okay, this is rough simplification. You can think quality basically this time way. Here you have cost. Here you have quality. Okay, let's say here we have kind of 100%. This is just a rough picture to present the idea, not based on any data. You may have different kind of projects in which this behaves a bit differently, but basically, quality curve for me works a bit like this. You never reach 100% quality, and the closer you go to the perfect quality, the higher, dramatically higher, the quality cost raise. So you just have to find the proper point in your quality costs in your own context. That's the whole idea of this thinking here, which is most important for me. Okay, I'm going to end the quality part here. This was at least my goal for this lecture. You should understand the quality from different perspectives. Some understand something, what we can do about it. And a couple of points that producing quality is more than just quality assurance, which is, again, more than just testing the software. So one of the most important points for this lecture. And we will come back to some of the things we discussed today later in this course. For example, when we talk about Agile next week. But remember that doing quality is not only programming and do some tests. Okay, so obviously you were not too familiar with software inspections. I hope you got some idea. I went it through very quickly, but I hope you got some idea about that. And finally, this whole thinking is about the business goals. Okay. Some questions, comments here. Okay, then we are fine with this part. So, in the end, I have just a few slides to comment and research, as I said, in the beginning. This is a few points from my experience on software engineering research, basically, during the years I've been involved in it. Uh, Maybe. Okay, let's go directly. So, one point is that you read in the literature a lot of success stories. Okay, this is nothing specific to software engineering, but my experience is mostly in software engineering field. And those success stories, I'm not asking you to doubt it all the time, but some things that are useful to consider when you read the papers. So these are not in any specific order, but what came to my mind first, first we have this kind of engineering mind. This goes with other fields also, not specifically in our field, but it's at least in our field. If you broadly look at the literature in the field, this is the kind of mainstream. The researchers want to develop a new method. There is very little validation for the method after that. They publish few papers on the method, and then they get something more interesting to do and develop a new method and continue the whole thing again. That's what happens a lot. Part of this is it's about the whole publication system in academia. It's more difficult to publish negative results. If you make a study, do some fine case study, and you try to implement some new method in a case organization and didn't get any useful out of it, it might be impossible to publish that kind of academic paper. It's at least it's difficult. It's one part of the story. So this means that also the researchers in the field are for these kind of success stories, not the negative results. And also the companies. In academia, we aim for cooperation with the companies. We often look for, different stakeholders. We look for case studies to put the research into practice in a real context. It's a good idea, but this is a side effect that from the company's point of view, there are some stupid attitudes for me also included in this process. But for the companies, this kind of part of their marketing practices, they want to cooperate with the academia for marketing issues. So, and for this, they often also want specifically for success stories. They want to be present in research papers so the whole world can see how this company is active in cooperating with research and how they are innovative and implemented all the new fancy methods and got brilliant results out of the studies. So that's kind of loop there. So, and I have faced this kind of issues. This is one thing you have to negotiate if you cooperate with the company to work for your master's thesis. Also, you have to negotiate about the publishing. Your thesis will be public documents, and you have to be clear with the company what you can publish out of it. So, but sometimes, if you get some negative viewpoints in your results, so the organization may not be happy to publish it. This is stupid point. So of the whole phenomenon. So, because it's stupid to pretend that we are perfect. I haven't seen any perfect organization, and we cannot do anything perfectly. Why should we pretend that in academic studies? So. Last point there. How do you explain this? Okay, there are several reasons. I mean, the point, when you do pay attention, put time and effort to improve something, it often leads to improvement for several reasons. So the third point here, that it's often real in improvement happens, something good happens if you invest time in it. So, but then the other effects may be, you are familiar with Hawthorne effect, raise hand. No, Hawthorne was a psychologist 100 years ago in a traditional factory. They tried, the whole concept comes from there. They tried different conditions in a factory, in a big factory hall. They would have a lot of people, and they changed lights or whatever arrangements, I don't remember specifically, and the performance in the experiment improved all the time. They changed the conditions back, and again the improvement happened. So the conclusion of this all was that when the participants in the study in the factory knew that they were under investigation, they improved their own work in the factory. So, okay, it's a classic term for this kind of false effect. So it may happen in the research also, that if you study some target group and they know that they are under the study, it may change their performance. Consciously or unconsciously, it depends. Both happens. Okay. A bit similarly, researcher may have effect. It happens that researchers happen to get often the results they want for several reasons. But for example, there are some what we don't understand in this phenomenon. I remember some studies in education. In a classroom, it has been shown that attitudes of the teacher, even if you don't communicate it, and there may be false attitudes tested with the teacher who don't know the students. But the teacher was told some stories about the student that formed teacher's attitude towards the students, and that attitude of the student, of the teacher, if it was right or not, affected the actual performance of the students. So if the student thought that the student is good, the student did better. And even if the background stories were false, isn't sometimes. So the same kind of logic for me, it's one of the reasons that affects the research. So a couple of things about this. Okay, this is just for the background. Generally in science, this is a kind of good idea for how we summarize cumulative base of knowledge in science. I think medicine has been a pioneer field in systematic literature reviews, and we have taken pretty much the same processes and ideas from there to our field, how to do them. So very simplified steps of how to do a good systematic literature review. You define a specific research question. Let's say my easy example is in medicine, the relationship between lung cancer and smoking. Okay, then you find a lot of data in databases, studies with some keywords. Then you start selecting the data of the findings that actually answers the question you want to know about. Then another round, if you are lucky, you have a lot of papers which try to answer that specific question you know want to know about, then you may add some other quality criterias, like who the participants should be, how many participants, how well-controlled study or something like that would be the keywords in medicine. I don't know much about medicine, but something like that. You select finally some number of high-quality research papers that specifically answer that research question. What is the relationship of lung cancer and smoking? Was it my example in the beginning? So, and then you do some meta-analysis of that selected number of public high-quality publications. Okay, what is the stadium I failed? From my experience, so I have made a couple of pretty comprehensive literature reviews in the field, and in both of the cases, my conclusion that we need way much more research to make strong conclusions like this. So, very few papers that which basically try to answer the same research question. Like I said, this kind of engineering mind in the field, it's that doesn't mass of. We don't usually replicate same kind of studies. We invent at least if we study the same topic. Let's say my second literature review was about test-driven development. What happened with that in the beginning? They published few papers, general papers, including some case studies about TDD generally, to study how effective it is in practice, or something like that. So then, after a few papers, no one was interested anymore this basic question. They studied TDD, but they moved some forward with the more specific research questions and so on. So it's hard to get a clear answer with very few papers. I found, I don't remember anymore how many, few dozen research papers overall on TDD, including some empirical research on any perspective in the field. So it was already a years ago. Some new research have come after that, but that's typical in the field. Hard to make strong conclusions. Okay, this is my very rough and simplified version from my story. For if we look, for example, agile. Agile is an exception. You cannot find many similar research topics in the whole IT field that would have produced so much research. We may have some meta-analysis at some level in agile research, but okay, my simplification what has happened in the fields I have studied with the research, how it emerged in the new field research question. So first, there come a new method, or however they call them. If you look at the agile discussion, the pioneers said that this is nothing new, just new kind of way to put it together. But anyway, it's it. Okay, some guy published a new method, published a couple of success stories, which we just discussed. Then there come a few others who get excited of this new method, a kind of fun club. And again, they get success, few other success stories. What is often in those cases in this first wave are that there are case studies and student experiments depending on the field. For example, And characteristics for the first wave papers are often, from my experience, poor case studies, that means poor reporting, ambiguous terminology, let's say, about agile if you read 15 years old papers, 2001, 2002, 3, something like those years, you find some maybe good quality discussions again, but many poor reports, they don't specifically enough describe what they did in their case, and then they just talk about very ambiguously agile without defining that. Okay, that may be also the case after that, but so I'm trying to kind of oversimplify this, generalize a bit too much. Student experiments, it's another issue. This is general for student experiments if you think something like agile, or in my literature review, test-driven development, in bits more technical issue, you can do student experiments, I did also, but the problem with them is that you have really small scale. You have some programming assignment which you can do in some assignment in a course, and the scale is really small. The programmers in that case are inexperienced at one point, and the scale is small. It's possibly not relevant at all to the bigger scale in the real world. And then you possibly get some in the first wave. Often there came also some first critical voices, and characteristic for those in the beginning was often misunderstanding. Let's say this agile discussion. This goes to the both parties. Do you know what's Strawman fallacy? Olkiukko. In Finnish, it's a general argument. In general, argumentation theory is one of the classical errors in argumentation. So let's say you have arguments for and against, and a strawman means that, let's say if we talk about agile, first here comes agile manifesto and first agile movement guys, and here raise first critical voices. They were in the beginning of 2000 often some experienced guys in the fields who didn't for some reason like about this agile movements, and what they did in several first papers, they used this kind of strawman fallacy. I don't know if it was conscious or not, but strawman means that you create your argumentation against something that's not true. You oversimplify or present the opposite argument something in wrong way. So they consciously or unconsciously, I don't know how, they misunderstood the whole point of this agile manifesto and representation of agile movement in the beginning. And they made their arguments against this so-called straw man, not the actual argument of the agile movement. Okay, this same goes to the both ways. Like, we're possibly going to discuss a bit about this next week, but when agile movement talks about traditional way, in contrast, traditional way of doing software, they often compare it to some really dumb way of implementing waterfall model, which nobody does in practice, have never done in practice, will never do in practice. Okay, then, after some time, there possibly, hopefully, comes some more mature research in our field, some very specific cases, you get some decent number of publications of the same research question and same topic to do some kind of meta-analysis. So, but the scale, in contrast, is something like that. I quickly checked the quick Googling they use these keywords, smoking and lung cancer. One example study I found quickly, they found over 6,000 papers quickly for the original data. They selected that their actual research question for meta-analysis was really narrow question to the whole phenomenon. So they started to decrease the number of the papers. They quickly checked titles and abstracts of them, and they decreased the number to hundreds of papers. They decided that the rest of the mass doesn't actually answer this question we have on board. Then they had to at least quickly go through the actual text of the papers of hundreds of articles. And then of them, they selected some dozens, and finally they selected with some criteria that matched the full selection criteria for the analysis. I think it was 10 papers in the end of 6,000. And in our field, you get in the beginning with very broad keywords, possibly a couple of hundreds results in the databases, and then you start reading and you get much, much, much less mass for the actual study. So, okay, that's all for today. See you next week again.